Can you do it quickly? I mean, can you give us an overview of what Ernie told you that set you on fire?
One incident was the F-106 incident at Misawa, Japan, back in 1959, where they had some specially modified 106s, specially equipped with new types of air-to-air radar, and they sent one of these things up to intercept a UFO that would normally come over. Normally the pattern would be they normally come over the base and sit there and hover. So on this particular day, they sent up one of these 106s to intercept it, and the pilot got within firing range, and he asked ground control if he had permission to fire, and ground control told him, well, let's call it, we'll call the Pentagon and let's see if we can get the okay for you to do that. So the short story is that he got the okay, and he fired his salvo of missiles at this UFO, and they all detonated, but the UFO was still there.
Yikes.
So the pilot by that time was in a full panic, and he told ground control, it's still in the air, the missiles didn't have any effect on it. And by that time, according to the story, the tractor beam came out of the UFO and latched on the 106. And the ground controllers could hear the pilots screaming and yelling as this thing was being pulled into the UFO.
My God.
And the other little incident...
Let's stick with that one for just a moment. If you were to fire a salvo of missiles, whatever he had at the time, into a UFO, was it a disc, typical disc shape?
Typical oval-looking shape, disc-shaped kind of object, right? And these things used to, back in the 50s, especially around Misawa, I understand that they used to just sit there and come in and just sit for hours and hours and just hover above the base.
My God. You know, that's kind of like taking a high-powered pistol and pumping six shots into somebody in front of you and having them smile at you.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, what, Robert, if you know, was the authorizing rationale to fire at something like this in the first place? Many of us have wondered about this. I mean, presumably something oval-shaped, defying gravity, having come light years to get here, probably wouldn't be something you want to shoot at, mostly.
Well, I don't know the mentality of the people who made that decision. I don't know how much they knew about what the Air Force knew starting from 1947 up to that period in 1959.
Right.
I don't know who the bureaucrats were in the Pentagon that said, yeah, I'll go ahead and try it. Maybe they just want to see how their new weapon systems worked, would affect these UFOs.
Remember, UFOs are not a threat to national security.
Right. We know that. Right.
So there was another incident, and then you tried to confirm these, and I'll be very interested in what you did. So what is the other one?
Well, according to what he said, there is a compound on Sandia Base that back in the early 60s that was used to do chemical testing on animals. And it's right across the street from where Loveless is today. If you go down to Sandia Base, if you get on the base, on the south end of the base, there's this called the Loveless Institute, and they do testing on animals. You can hear the dogs barking in the back of the compound, so they test on dogs too. But back in '64, they were doing testing on horses and monkeys, and other exotic or different types. I don't remember all the different types of animals, but Ernie and his friend Bob. Was in this compound, and according to what he told me, they were doing chemical testing on alien body parts, radiation testing.
My God.
And those two stories, and then, of course, there's...
What, radiation testing?
Yeah, radiation, to see how the body parts respond to radiation.
All right, so these were... Live apparent aliens dead?
These were very dead aliens.
Very dead.
They were. One of the doctors, I think, told Ernie they were. These bodies were on loan, or the body parts were on loan from Wright-Patterson at the time. And the doctor told Ernie the rest of what they had was up at Wright-Patt.
Holy smokes! All right, you're right. I mean, if somebody told you with a straight face these two stories, I can see how that would light a fire, get you going, try to confirm the stories. After all, if true, this is the world's biggest story, isn't it?
Oh, it's been a big story for a long time, but it seems to get buried in the wars of Iraq or something.
Well, yeah. So all right. You heard this. You set out to try and confirm the stories. What did you do?
Well, it was a succession of steps. First, I had a call, a lot of people, and I who knew Ernie had verified that this guy was really who he said he was. And they said, yes, we've heard the same stories, and we know who he is, and we know his background, and we don't doubt what he's saying to us, that it might be true. Then I proceeded to call Bill Moore. And,
of course, Bill Moore.
Right, and Bill Moore took a very big interest in this, in Ernie. And so he called Ernie, I believe, and I don't know what he talked to.
Would you do me a favor and repeat Ernie's last name again?
Kellerstrass.
Kellerstrass. Okay. What position was he in? What was Ernie? How did he know all these things?
Well, that's another story in itself. He is a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. He's worked at AFLTEC. His primary mission was in intelligence. He did a lot of intelligence work, but he tells me that he never had any direct access to any of this material. It's what somebody else told him, except for the two direct incidences that we talked about.